Over the course of my career at the CIA, I had occasion to work with lots of military officers assigned to the Defense Intelligence Agency. These military diplomats were well represented in U.S. embassies abroad, and their job was to liaise with host country military officers. But what many people don't know is that the culture inside DIA can sometimes be toxic, and that toxicity, if left unchecked, can severely damage the national security. That's why whistleblowers are so critical. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Virtually any organization, whether in government or in private industry, has had to deal with issues of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality. But when the dysfunction is at the top, among the organization's leadership, what's an employee to do? In the case of our next guest, his only consideration was to blow the whistle. Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Sweezy said that the Defense Intelligence Agency's actions were, quote, alienating and disenfranchising our intelligence personnel while disrupting and degrading operations, unquote. Those are serious charges. So what exactly was happening at DIA? According to our next guest, a colleague at the Defense Attaché Office in Rome was secretly reporting negative information about the performance of coworkers to superiors. The practice turned managers in Western Europe against their subordinates, creating a hostile work environment and disrupting their efforts to gather intelligence. In another incident, a DIA officer's private medical condition was exposed and used against that officer. Add to that backbiting evidence of retaliation, and you have an intelligence agency that is simply not able to function the way that it should. Our guest today is that DIA whistleblower, Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Sweezy. Thanks so much for being with us. We're glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, John. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you. Colonel, let's start with your career. Tell us about your history in the military, how you got involved in intelligence, and tell us a little about your time at DIA and in the Defense Attaché program.
Yeah, so I was a 1999 graduate of the Air Force Academy. After graduation, went to pilot training, where I then flew F-16s for the better part of my 22-year career in the Air Force. My penultimate assignment was with the Defense Intelligence Agency. I was selected from a swath of Air Force officers to become an air attaché, eventually landing myself a position as air attaché to Italy and Switzerland, that position being overseen and managed by the Defense Intelligence Agency, which brought me to that organization. I served there for 3 years, and after that assignment, went on to serve as a staff officer for about a year before my retirement last February.
See, and you are the kind of officer with that background that the Pentagon wants in these positions. In all the years that I was in the CIA working overseas, I thought that DIA was a well-oiled machine. The DIA officers with whom I worked, regardless of what country it was in, were substantive experts in their fields. They had close and friendly relationships in the host ministries of defense. And they were all personally popular. Everybody wanted to hang out with the defense attachés. It never even occurred to me that there might be internal problems. Tell us about what you saw at DIA that bothered you. When did you begin, and what was your reaction initially?
Well, it is a dichotomy because what struck me first about the attaché service was walking into class the first day and meeting my would-be colleagues, attaché colleagues. And when you spoke to them and read their CVs and read their bios, it was a veritable who's who of the American military. Mm-hmm. You had Harvard graduates, you had Olmsted scholars, you had special operators, you had pilots. It was the creme de la creme of the United States military. And rightfully so, you want to put your best foot forward in terms of the officer corps representation in the nations abroad that they're serving. And then on the other hand, the flip side of that coin, that dichotomous coin, was the management of the defense attaché service. The thing that struck me very bluntly right out the gate was my first interaction with management of the defense attaché service, or DAS. and they purported this mantra of high production, low drama, end quote. And I wasn't sure what that meant exactly, but I came out to find out very well what that meant, which is don't rock the boat because we will make your life difficult.
Just so our viewers can understand, you are in a position like that, you're an intelligence collector. Much of what you collect is either unclassified or it's collected by observation. You're not out there meeting with sources in the middle of the night behind a garbage dumpster. You're there as an official representative of the United States Department of Defense. You're liaising with military, senior military officials of the host country. What kind of information is it that you're out there trying to collect without rocking that boat?
Right, and all defense attachés throughout the world, whether it be from our country or others, fall under that Vienna Convention, like
That's
you
right.
said. It is covered via international convention that we're in the country observing and reporting. And also, our dual role really is to advocate for U.S. interests in that host nation, and vice versa, advocate for our hosts' interests as they pertain to the United States. So our interlocutors range from anything from the mid-level captain all the way up to the chief of defense of that nation and anything in between.
That's right. Like so many whistleblowers whom we've had on this show, you went through your chain of command when you saw evidence of wrongdoing. That is exactly what we're all trained to do. But going through the chain of command didn't work. So, first, what was the wrongdoing that you reported? And second, what was the response from your chain of command when you did that reporting?
Yeah, the whole issue really snowballed from what I thought was going to be relatively easily resolved. And that was we had two colleagues within the office who were underperforming in the mission. And as operations officer, my role was to ensure that everyone was fulfilling their role as well as their potential in country. And we had two officers who not only were not doing that, but they were impeding others carrying out that mission, whether it be with their toxicity, causticity, or just lack of teamwork. So over the course of about a year, I tried to resolve that at the lowest level, meaning within the office chain of command. And it was an incremental and gradual approach in which I addressed it to the eventual failure. It was met with excuses and eventually retribution. Mm. And that's when I explored other avenues to include the Inspector General of the Defense Intelligence Agency, as well as the office's chain of command at headquarters in D.C.
Before we get to the Inspector General, which is very important, I want to ask you about the initial stages of these, what really were protected whistleblower complaints that you were making. What was it exactly that you were reporting? What was it that you were seeing that you believed constituted waste, fraud, abuse, and illegality?
Well, the first thing is that as an attaché, the military invests a lot of resources
Yes.
into your training
Mm-hmm.
and then into your assignment itself. We were very well resourced to execute the mission. The training program is very well resourced. So to go out on station and then have the veritable commanding officer say, no one ever got sent home for not writing, is not only dereliction of duty, it's an incredible waste of government resources that are invested into the attaché and into that operation to do exactly that, which is to write. So I likened it as a pilot to going through pilot training and showing up at your first operational unit and being told, you know what, you need not fly here, which was astounding to me.
Wow, yeah, that's shocking. After you made your complaints through the chain of command, you then went to the Inspector General, as you said a moment ago. Again, that's exactly what we're trained to do. If you don't get satisfaction in that chain of command, you go to the Inspector General. In my case, you know, I objected to the torture program. It was my chain of command that had created the torture program. So you want to go to the inspector general. But just like in your chain of command, you did not get satisfaction there. What happened with the inspector general's office? What was that experience like?
So I took on an incremental approach. First, obviously, like we talked about within the office, then I took it to my commander's commander and said, look, here's what I'm seeing, here's what's happening within the office. Before I go to the inspector general, I'd like the opportunity for you to come out and vet the issues, to which she did. However, instead of rectifying the issues, this is where the reprisals took place, which took the form of her coming out to the location abroad, removing my assignment, my follow-on assignment, removing the assignment for two others of my colleagues, and sending one back to DC after only about 10 months on station. So that was that was the real genesis of the IG complaint, was not this fraud, waste, and abuse, dereliction of duty, toxic work environment. That contributed to the headquarters management coming out and committing reprisal on all of us who had raised these issues. That's where Title 10, the letter of the law, was broken.
You know, that's an important point. I'm glad you raised it, because what you're talking about, the retribution that you're talking about, is very clearly and specifically a violation of the whistleblower protection law that we have in the federal government. They just can't do things like that. At what point did you say, the system is just simply not working for me, I'm going to have to do something radical, something that I never expected to have to do, like hire an attorney, for example?
Yeah, you read my mind, John, because it got to that point where I took actions that I never thought I would, and I never thought I would have to. And maybe that surprised me even more. Having been grown up, so to speak, in the operational Air Force, and then seeing the seedy underbelly of the United States military that I never thought I would. And that point came about 9 months into the IG investigation. So for the recap of the timeline of events, the headquarters had come out, committed reprisal on multiple attachés, including myself. Shortly thereafter, I filed an inspector general complaint citing multiple counts of reprisal. That investigation then languished on for the better part of 9 months, and ultimately about 16 months. But at that nine-month mark is when I surmised something was amiss. I felt that the DIA's inspector general was not carrying out the investigation with due diligence. And I say that as a former IG myself from the Air Force. And I felt they were not actively pursuing the case in good faith. Wow. And it was at that point where I emailed 170 of my former defense attaché service colleagues, and I said, I'm Ryan Swayze. Here's what I saw occurring, i.e. fraud, waste, and abuse, toxic work environment, followed by retributive hits carried out by the leadership of the agency, followed by an inspector general that's complicit in allowing it to all play out. Who else out there is seeing what I'm seeing? Wow. That for me was the turning point, and at which I said, I never thought it would come to this, but I'm being stonewalled clearly after being the victim of reprisal, and something needs to change here.
Wow. We are speaking with Defense Intelligence Agency whistleblower Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Swayze. We're going to take a short break and come right back for more of this conversation. Stay tuned.
to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Defense Intelligence Agency whistleblower Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Swayze about problems inside that agency. Colonel, thanks again for being with us.
Thanks again, John. Appreciate it.
Just before the break, we were talking about you going to the Office of the Inspector General to report malfeasance in DIA. Not only did the Inspector General say that it was unable to confirm the information that you had reported, but the IG also told you that it had concluded that there was insufficient evidence that you were a victim of reprisal. It's pretty easy to see what the reprisal is, even from an outsider's perspective. So first, tell us about what reprisals you suffered. And second, why do you think the Inspector General failed to act? Who was the Inspector General covering for?
Yeah, so the elements of reprisal, simply put, are you. The victim has to make a protected communication. So that's a report of a wrongdoing to the chain of command, Inspector General, Congress. And then there has to be an unfavorable personnel action taken as a result of that protected communication. So in my case, in the case of my colleagues, we raise concerns of fraud, waste, and abuse, dereliction of duty, and a toxic work environment. And as a result, and a direct result of those reports, our follow-on assignments were canceled, and I was subsequently given a subpar annual performance report, which all but ended my professional Air Force career. Wow. And there was the link right there in black and white.
A Defense Attaché Service workforce survey conducted in 2020 found almost half of respondents said that they had witnessed hostile behavior in the workplace, including harassment, intimidation, and bullying. 30% said that they had directly experienced racial, gender, or other discrimination. To me, these are crazy numbers. Has this been your experience? Do these numbers sound right to you?
They do, and that report came as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request I put forth after I had queried the 170 former colleagues. I actually received an anonymous tip about that climate assessment from that query.
Right.
And not only did the informant tell me about the assessment, they told me about the leadership's attempt to cover up that assessment when they received the results and not only did not act, but summarily ignored and dismissed the abhorrent results that you just briefed. And so to your previous question, and the question that's begged now is why? Why would the agency be so apt to not address that, would be so apt to instead punish or retribute against the people who raise concern of the problem but never attack the problem themselves? And I think it just comes down to protecting the institution. There is a cabal in place within the Defense Intelligence Agency that has inserted themselves in de facto power, and they enjoy many benefits thereof, whether it be employment, whether it be career progression, whether it be power. They derive that from allowing and purporting the institution to remain in place. So for a whistleblower such as myself to have an allegation substantiated, or for this climate assessment to see the light of day, is seen as an existential threat to that institution. And when that institution is threatened, the reaction, there is no bounds, as we've seen. Careers were upended, personal lives upended as well. People were derailed. Careers were ended, as I saw with my case and others. And it is all because, and really for the sake of the continued existence of this institution.
Mm-hmm. After the survey was published, Defense Attaché Service Director Michael Bokna emailed his staff and promised to address all of the issues that respondents had raised. Has that happened? Have things improved to the best of your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge, and I would say that because of the timing of the climate assessment and then the timing of my report to Congress. So that climate assessment that you mentioned was done in September of 2020. When all is said and done, by the time I had collected and collated approximately 70 witness statements from the Defense Intelligence Agency and sent that report to Congress, it was March of 2022.
Wow.
So at least a year and a half later. Mm-hmm. So if there were any substantive actions taken, then I think logic would say that I would not have had the number of respondents and the number of allegations to boot by that point.
One of the things consistently disappointing to me is the failure of the congressional oversight committees to actually oversee agencies appropriately and to address these kinds of problems. I complain about this all the time, frankly. Have the Senate or House Armed Services Committees done anything at all to fix these problems? Have you been in touch at all with the oversight committees?
Yeah, so I engaged two primary oversight committees, both the House Armed Services Committee, HASC, and then the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, or HPSI, commonly referred to as the House Intel Committee. From the HASC, I received fairly tepid response. Nothing substantive was carried out. However, from the HPSI, the story was different. And I think one of the issues that I brought to light, which we haven't discussed yet, was the potential violations of Executive Order 12333 or 1233. Ooh. And that is the explicit prohibition, with exceptions, of course, of collecting and reporting on U.S. persons. Right. There were multiple allegations in that report to Congress about violations of EO 12333, and not only reporting and collecting, but allegations that managers and leaders within the Defense Intelligence Agency tasked Americans abroad to collect and report on other Americans. And I surmise that is what really caught the attention of the House Intel Committee, mm-hmm. because they did act on it, in fact, and they passed into law via the fiscal year 2023 Intelligence Authorization Act several remedial measures that DIA is to carry out. And of course, the IAA, Intel Authorization Act, becomes part of the larger National Defense Authorization Act, which was just passed this last December. And in it, it states that DIA must conduct 360-degree feedback, must do exit interviews, must report the results of climate surveys now to congressional oversight entities. And it said in black and white that the DIA has failed up to this point to curb an environment which is ripe for management abuses. And in that, they were spot on.
Wow. That is big news, actually. When I was at the CIA, we practically had to tattoo the text of Executive Order 12333 on our arms so that we didn't forget it. It's arguably one of the most important executive orders that's ever been signed by any president. I hope that DIA is able to clean up its act in the light of these revelations. One more question for you. There are several important whistleblower groups here in the Washington area, the biggest one being NWC, the National Whistleblower Center. They have very close relations with pro-whistleblower legislators on Capitol Hill, especially people like Senator Chuck Grassley, for example. Have they reached out to you to discuss these issues? And have they, if they have reached out to you, have they offered to put you in touch with members of Congress who may not be sitting on the oversight committees, but would be sympathetic to the information that you have?
Yes, and I think the biggest benefit that we've garnered from the relationship between myself and the NWC and some champions in Congress is looking at it through contrasting with civilian whistleblower law, especially in the securities regime, SEC-wise. And so with, is it Frank Dodd? The name eludes me now, but there is a an act which incentivizes, in a way, whistleblowers to come forward in the financial sector,
right,
to the tune of, if there are sanctions, that whistleblower is by law required to receive at least 10% and sometimes up to 50% of those sanctions.
That's right.
And the takeaway from that, in contrast with the military, and especially in the intelligence community, is that there exists no incentive and no reward for whistleblowers. And by reward, I really mean risk mitigation.
Yes.
When you are a whistleblower in the IC, in the intelligence community, it is 100% risk and personal risk, not only to your personal life, but to your career. And the government affords no offset. Not only are you likely to be the victim of subsequent retribution, but you're also incurring a lot of personal risk for a relatively low likelihood that you're going to incite some kind of systemic changes. In the SEC world, that's different. They're authorized, not only authorized, they are mandated to receive some kind of compensation should there be findings. Mm-hmm. And so the project we're working on, and we're trying to get momentum, is that you have to somehow offer some kind of incentive, some kind of risk offset for the whistleblower within the military, within the intelligence community.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Swayze, for joining us. And thanks to our viewers for watching. President Abraham Lincoln once said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." It's all too common for power to corrupt, and as the old saying goes, for absolute power to corrupt absolutely. That's why we need whistleblowers. The road for them is almost never the easy one, but our society is better because of them. I'm John Kiriakou, and you've been watching The Whistleblowers. Until next time.